Okay, this episode of the podcast is brought to you by Liquid Drum. Liquid Drum is all about percussion and community. They're a small organization spreading big ideas through drums, percussion, and music in general. Whether through performing, teaching, or simple sharing, Liquid Drum values the communal aspects of creating music and having a good time whilst doing it. You can find them on the web at liquiddrum.com or check out their extensive percussion video library on YouTube and or Vimeo. I also perform exclusively on custom-made steel drums made by Kyle Dunleavy. Kyle's been making steel drums under his own name since 1999. He has a wide, diverse portfolio of experience in the art form, beginning as a player at the Hart School of Music as a student. He worked on internships with U.S.-based instrument companies and worked with the legendary Dr. Ellie Minette in workshops that he hosted. He's also performed Trinidadian steel bands, including Phase Two Pangroove, Siparia, Deltones, and the Southern Marine steel bands. And with Kyle's experience and his passion for his instrument, he's sort of developed in his drums what he calls, and I would call too, the Dunleavy sound. And it can be heard in all of his instruments throughout the whole steel orchestra, including his bold low G oversized lead played by artists such as Victor Provost. His signature low E double seconds happen to be my pan of choice, and he's making me a set of low C double seconds, so watch out for those. All right, you can check out his pans at www.dunleavypans.com. That's D-U-N-L-E-A-V-Y, pans.com. All right, my guest today on episode number 38 of the Concert Honesty Podcast is Jacqueline Russo Eng. That's the badass that you're listening to right now. Not the one crying. That's a baby in the audience, which happens. You hear that? Well, the piece that she's playing is a piece by Roger Zahab that was written for me called I Still Dream. And Jacqueline and I took lessons on this all semester. She totally killed it. She sounds amazing. I think the baby stopped. Anyway, during the softest part of the piece, she powered through like a champ. And it was in that moment when I realized that, oh, the baby's back. When I realized Jacqueline was going to be just fine. And I didn't really need to worry about her. There's a ton of other students to stress about. She's not one, okay? So she's gone on to have a career now as a full-time baker. And I've been following her on Instagram, sort of secretly checking in on what she's been baking and being fat. I mean, it's gorgeous. They're like works of art, these loaves of bread she makes. Anyway, I was really lucky to get to sit down and chat with her in her apartment. We talked a little bit about her background, what got her into baking in particular, where she works now. A few horror stories about the baking industry. A little bit of history about the differences between sourdough, starter, and unleavened bread, all of that stuff that I don't really know anything about. But she's super smart about that stuff. She also taught me how to make cinnamon rolls. And so if you listen to the podcast, you listen all the way through to the end, you'll hear her walk me step by step. So if you want some awesome cinnamon rolls, take a listen. All right. You're going to be a big fan of Jacqueline after you listen to this. I'm pretty sure of it. So enjoy, and enjoy the rest of her performance of I Still Dream by Roger Zahab. All right. Talk to you soon. Bye. Thank you. wouldn't mind talking a little bit. Say your name a few times.
My name is Jacqueline. I live in New York. We're going to talk about bread. Yes. It's really strange hearing myself. Definitely getting nervous.
Okay, is it too loud?
No.
You can hear it okay?
Yeah.
You shouldn't be nervous. You've played a... I was thinking about on the drive down. I have very specific memories of you in school. One of them was playing I Still Dream.
Yeah, with, I didn't do a very good job.
No, you did, but there was a baby crying real loud. Do you remember that?
I remember hearing that and thinking, oh, thank God, a distraction. I was just like wanting to run off the stage.
Oh, that's hilarious.
I was not a good performer.
Well, hey, well, first of all, Jacqueline Russo-Ang, that's not true at all. Welcome. First of all, welcome to my silly podcast. It is a pleasure to... first of all, to have you as a guest, but it was a pleasure to have you as a student. This would have been, you graduated when?
2011.
So we're about almost seven, 8 years out of school. And it's interesting to me to see students go on. I think I probably had said this to you when you were a student. I still say today that I don't have any interest in any students becoming professional steel drummers or really, frankly, even professional percussionists. Like that's something I just can't promise anybody. Like I don't know how to make that happen for somebody, but I do have an interest in you being a professional human being and being good at, you know, knowing how to, you know, self-criticizing your, you know, how you play or how you dealt with a certain situation in chamber music or whatever. That applies to no matter what you're doing. And it's been fascinating to sort of see you out of school as one of my earliest students. I think you might have been one of the first or second classes there.
Yeah, I think maybe it was your second year there.
Might have been. Yeah. But you sort of have grown. You sort of would post these pictures of like things you baked or something you were eating. It was clear you had sort of an interest in food and particular baking. And you've sort of really now like inhabited this space we were just talking before we started that you're like looking into starting your own bakery. So I wanted to talk with you about that because I'm just fascinated by people's choices in life and what they do and where they find their passion. So if you wouldn't mind, just start from wherever you feel comfortable. Tell us a little bit about yourself and sort of what brought you to today, the day before your 30th birthday. And which wedding anniversary is it?
Number two.
All right, Jeff Ang. Pressure's on, buddy.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned like the precursor to baking because when I talk to people like now in my current industry and they want a bio, I always mention, well, I was a drummer, but now I do this. And the reason I made the switch is because all through college and like just shortly post college, I would always rather be like baking something for a fundraiser for a show or like cooking for the after party than actually practicing for performance. Mm-hmm. So eventually it made more sense. Like I should probably devote the time fully to this instead of like begging for gigs that I'm not getting anyway. And you know, so
where were you in school when you had that sort of, when that hit you as something, as a reality for you?
In school, I think it hadn't come full term yet. At least consciously, but I remember like always being excited to get out of a rehearsal or like get home. So like, what am I making for dinner for all the guys or whatever? Because our apartment was where everyone hung out. So, yeah.
Who all was in your class? Was it all percussion majors that were in the house? Yeah. Who was all staying together? Because we, you know, that sort of phenomenon.
Yeah, you didn't get to see that.
I never saw it, but I definitely participated in it in my own way. When I was an undergrad, we had the house we had. We call it the Hawk's Nest.
Oh, okay.
And it was on Hawk Street, Hawk or Hawk Avenue or something, just outside of Akron. It was the same thing. Thanksgiving parties were all at our house. We would always have the keg.
Yeah.
It was a big house in Akron, so we could have 50 people over if we wanted to. So,
oh wow, that's amazing.
We never, well, it was, we'd have the whole studio and then their girlfriends and boyfriends would come and it was a big blowout. But anyway,
So it was myself and Alex Reynolds and Paul Frucht. We shared what was a one bedroom, and For some reason, Paul got the nice big bedroom, and
that oddly, knowing Paul, that doesn't surprise me. Oddly, somehow he swung it.
We were fine with it, but the living room slash into the kitchen. The kitchen had like a little cutout wall with a counter into the living room, and then that became two bedrooms, and mine was the one with the cutout into the kitchen, and it was just a little piece of cardboard to make the wall.
So you got to do what you got to do. It's
yeah,
it's fine.
Yeah, there would be nights where someone would just go ahead and like knock it over, and it would fall right on my face because my futon was right under the counter. And yeah,
savages. It was probably Paul.
Yeah,
blame Paul.
Maybe, but it was a good space just because since everyone was already centered there, everyone's friends also came, and next to the kitchen was this tiny, tiny little space for a 4-seater table, and we would put too many people at it and always be hanging out.
And so you found like being in rehearsals, you were looking forward to get out because you enjoyed sort of hosting everybody,
just being social.
Yeah,
yeah.
And is that something as a kid, like, were your parents that way? Like,
big I've met Italian your family.
Okay, I've met your folks a few times, and
yeah.
So what was it like growing up in a house like that?
I mean, it was never just us. Like, my immediate family is 4 people. I have 1 brother, but 15 cousins, 10 aunts and uncles, and then all the extensions of that, and everyone always shows up because no one moved away. I'm the furthest away, and I'm only 30 miles.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
So yeah, and they're all in Jersey.
And was cooking and baking sort of a big, was that part of your family structure? Like, always, people were always making things. I mean, it wasn't in my household. My mom, I mean, she made stuff, but it was functional. I mean, oh my gosh, she's going to kill me. I mean, it was for dinner. We all ate dinner together every night. We weren't, we didn't have a traditional Italian vibe or anything. Okay. I was raised Welsh-Irish. Mm-hmm. We all had the same food. Like, it was... and we all sat down, we ate dinner every night. But my mom was not, she would still say she's not, she made some things really well.
Okay.
But most things, it was enough to get by.
She did it because someone had to do it.
Somebody had to do it. And I don't think she hated doing it. I don't think it was like miserable. My dad was definitely not going to, I mean, for many reasons. And the most important one is that he was horrible at it. But it wasn't until I got to grad school where I realized, like, wait a minute, people actually care about food.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not just a thing to sort of...
You don't just need this to survive. You can enjoy it.
That's crazy. Can you talk about how you sort of... Has that always been a part of your life? You've always seen food as this sort of extra thing? Or, like, what...
Well, I probably took it for granted just because I was surrounded by so many good things. So my father's side as a family came over from Sicily right after they got married. And... after my grandparents got married, they made everything from scratch because they had to when they were growing up. So you didn't buy tomato sauce at the store. You got your tomatoes from your garden or from the garden next door and made enough sauce and canned it for the year.
Yeah.
So I still do that every August with my family, 3 generations. We have like the big like kiddie pulls full of tomatoes from a farm near Princeton, and wash them, crush them, cook them down. But like that, or making fresh pasta, or even wine. We make our own wine every year. Yeah.
Is it good?
It's like table wine. It's like you buy a, $15 bottle of Chianti or whatever. It's drinkable. And
well, that's more than other people who make wine. So I have a lot of people in my life who are like, oh, I make wine. Oh, you do you? Let me taste this Robitussin you've made. With you, though, I feel like I could trust that it would be a step above. But
maybe we should open the bottle later.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, you have? Yeah. So what do you you make, how many jars of tomato sauce are you making every August? Like, is it enough to get through the year?
It is definitely enough to get through the year. And also, like, gift to other people. I would say probably about 250, sometimes 300 jars.
Oh my God.
Like quart. I have one on the shelf, but it's hidden.
Do you, on average, how many do you go through? I mean, is this something you're making because it's like you're stocking up meat for the winter? Like, you're going to go through 30 jars of this.
It is. And my parents' house, in their cellar, they just have like a full basically pantry, this is the tomato rack, you know, mm-hmm. for everyone. This is the wine rack. This is the jam rack. Mm. So, yeah, it's like a larder almost.
What's a larder?
Basically just like a very cool room before you had a refrigerator where you would keep things. But it is canned, so it'll last forever. It'll be fine. Mm-hmm. But it's just nice to have this space outside of their functional kitchen where you just store food for the year or for Armageddon or something, you know?
Yeah. What got you into percussion, first of all? Like, that's, you obviously liked it enough to do it for a living. you're laughing and making a face that I'm perhaps off the mark here, but what got you into that?
So, I was a violinist from age 5.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So I took private lessons. It was okay for what age I was. Mm-hmm. Luckily we had an orchestra in middle school, so mm-hmm. I did that. I got to high school and all of my friends were in the band. And there was a boy I liked in the band. Uh-huh. So what's the easiest switch? I can already read music and mm-hmm. like know how the piano keys work. Mm-hmm. They threw me on a xylophone. So that's how that happened.
Because none of the boys in the percussion section could read music.
Right.
Yeah, that's also a fairly common. I mean, I was in fifth grade in 1990, let's say, 89, 90. Same deal. Like, I was the guy that you put on the bass drum, mm-hmm. or I was the captain of the snare section or whatever, my high school, but put a bell part in front of me and I'm a dead man. And, and we would play these John Philip Sousa marches and they would just take a flute part or a trumpet part, mm-hmm. which is also transposing the trumpet part. So you're also reading stuff a step higher, whatever it is, than you're seeing, mm-hmm. which I didn't understand. I just thought, like, why the hell would they write a pitch that didn't exist?
Yep.
Just
write it the right way.
That doesn't make any sense. Yeah, the right way. But yeah, they would always call a flute player up to come to play the bell part. And there was one girl in the percussion section who happened to be able to read music. And she, poor Casey, she was always the one that had to play the bell part. But had that not been the case for you, we would have never met.
Nope.
You would have never met Jeff.
Nope.
So thank God you had a crush in the concert, in the concert band. Yeah, the orchestra in my high school, I don't think about that. Like, the orchestra always felt like a different.
As it was.
Yeah. But like, why wasn't there a marching? Like, there should be a marching orchestra. Like, we should.
Oh my God. Can you imagine like the humidity issues with that?
Oh, that's true. You'd have to go somewhere where
all plastic, electronic, like rock orchestra. Yeah.
Or you'd have to go somewhere where Southern California or something where the humidity is a little more controlled. And anyways, all right, so you've now transferred out of the orchestra.
Well, no, I didn't.
Oh,
I just added on.
You just added. Okay.
Yeah,
got it.
I was the like music nerd in my high school where mm-hmm. it was a very large, like 2000 kids. It was a regional uh-huh. high school. But so I stayed in the orchestra. I joined the band and the drum line and the chamber music, everything that I could. Mm-hmm. And I did choir too. So I was the one who was skipping other classes to be in music.
Mm. Got it. And so then, but where did you decide to major in music in college, to go to college, go to NYU for music?
My junior year in high school, I met Simon Boyer because mm-hmm. he grew up in Hillsborough, New Jersey, which is just down the road from where I grew up. And he was playing like a free library show, mm-hmm. basically. And I introduce myself after the show, like, I play marimba too, oh my goodness, like, where do other people do this? Because mm-hmm. I didn't even know like what sort of outlets there were yet. I hadn't thought about college yet. And then he had just started teaching at the pre-college at Juilliard, so I wound up taking lessons with him that year, my junior year. And then senior year I joined the pre-college, so it was kind of like a private thing, and mm-hmm. then a full curriculum music theory, like oral training, everything.
Yeah.
So once I got there, that was just, it wasn't me thinking about, oh, what am I going to do in college? It was just, oh, I can get better at this thing. Let me go do it.
Mm.
And then once I got there, it seemed like, well, of course I'll do this in college, because why would I stop doing this?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
As soon as you got to college then, like, when did you start thinking about were you thinking about like what you wanted to do for a living? Like,
no.
What were you?
I was like, I'm just gonna play marimba forever, and someone's gonna pay me.
Like, and when? At what point did somebody tell you the truth? Not about your ability, but just the economy just probably isn't gonna support solo marimba playing. To the level that you wanted.
Probably the day I got to college. Like, yeah. The second, like, Jonathan, like, sat down with the freshman, probably.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
Were you sort of sidelining and freelancing all through school in terms of, like, when did your stock portfolio in terms of time spent practicing and time spent learning about, like, yeast and baking, when did that start to change for you?
I would say the last few months of my senior year at college.
Okay. Yeah. So right about the time we were taking pan lessons together, and you were probably realizing.
Yeah, because it was so fun, but it was like, what am I going to do with this? Where am I going to take it? Because I know I'm not good enough to do the forever thing, and I didn't want to work hard enough to be good enough at that, but I wanted to work hard at the food thing.
Yeah.
I was obsessed with the food thing, so, yeah.
I think that's something, too, as a teacher, it's hard because you sometimes, if you see a student who's not practicing. I never felt this way about you, to be clear, and I don't think Simon or Jonathan.
It's okay if you did.
No. It's the truth. I didn't. But it's hard to determine sometimes whether or not someone's just A, not interested in what they're studying, B, just lazy and not like, or it's hard to determine what somebody's motivations are. Like, what? Why is this person not doing that? Sometimes it's just because they are lazy. Yeah. There are those students who just don't want to do anything. Or want to get drunk every night, you know. But then there are some who are just like, this isn't what I want to be doing. And if you can just find the thing you want to be doing, they're going to work at that as hard as you want them to work on scales or excerpts or whatever.
Actually, thinking back, I came to SOCI twice, like the very first year and then the year right after. In that second year, I didn't go back because I thought like, well, this is, I'm doing music. I went back for the people, for the like social aspect of it, just wanting to be in that, in their presence.
Like being around, like working with people was something that was...
Yeah.
Like of your percussion studies, the chamber music thing, or being in the room with other folks.
That was the most fun. Yeah. Like, could never stand orchestra auditions or that kind of thing. You're just like counting for hours.
Me neither.
Some people like it, but I don't like it.
Oh, I like playing in an orchestra most times. I don't like waiting for 400 bars and doing one triangle hit.
But like, I would always just think, why can't I just, you know, I'll do violin for this, but then I'll do drums for everything else. How do I make this work? And I didn't.
Yeah. So. Well, I just always felt like the return on my investment pursuing the orchestra route was going to be way lower than my return on my investment pursuing the steel drum route. And to me, the older I get, the more I actually think that both of those are fairly niche path to take.
Yes.
It's like, oh, I want to take orchestra auditions my whole life. Like, the idea that you would also be like, well, steel drums is going to be hard. No, they're both relative to the job market. They're both relatively
niche. If anything, steel drum might be slightly easier because you just create your career, right?
Yeah, and I think if you do it right, you may end up making more money.
Probably, yeah.
And have a lot more free drinks and and roasted pig at people's backyard parties and stuff.
It's more fun.
I think that, yeah. Did we ever play any gigs together?
Nope.
No? Mm. I haven't actually done a whole... I'm out of the freelance scene in New York because of my work was so... Because I'm out of town so much.
Yeah, it's okay.
Well, you get bumped down to the lower... You know, I love playing pan gigs. I love showing up and not knowing who it is I'm going to play with and trying to figure that out.
But if you don't say yes every time, they stop calling.
Yeah, or you just move. Yeah, you just end up at the bottom of the barrel, which is currently where I'm resting comfortably. all right, so you've graduated now. What was your first gig outside of school? As a, you know, you've made the decision to not pursue music as a career where you're going to make your money. So now the baking is definitely moved in its place.
Yes.
How did you start skinning that cat to make that work?
Well, first I was like a bartender and a waitress all through college just to, you know, sort of have that, like make a savings and be self-sufficient. But I kept doing it after graduation so that I could try and take some gigs. Um, bec- because, as you know, it's not enough to live on when you're piecing them together in the very beginning. But I made a decision, like, 6 months out to take a job in an office. Mm-hmm. I started working at Atlantic Records. So I told myself, I'm still in music, like, technically surrounded by music people, but I'm, you know, doing budgets and financial paperwork at a desk for 8 hours a day, and then still taking a couple gigs here and there at night on the side. But a year into that, it was very clear that, you know, I'm not working hard enough to make the gigs happen, to keep those connections, and I'm kind of getting too comfortable with this desk job, and I need a change.
Did you enjoy it?
No.
But it wasn't bad enough that you were, like, you hated it.
Oh, no. Yeah. I was bored, I think. Like, I was quick enough at whatever. I was an assistant, basically, for the CFO. And whatever he needed done was not difficult. And the rest of the time, I would just be sitting at a computer, you know, on Facebook or whatever, like, looking up recipes or, like, planning.
Plotting your eventual takeover of the baking
exactly.
world.
Exactly. So I thought, well, you know, I make enough, I'm comfortable, but I'm super bored and not satisfied. And why, like, what am I doing with my life? I'm very young, have no reason to need a comfortable job like this. So, you know, let's go rock the boat again. And that's when I walked into a kitchen and asked for a job.
Unpack that for me for a second.
Like, I quit my job with no plan.
So did this all happen within the same, like, 24-hour time period? Or
No. Started talking about it. Weeks went by. Couldn't stop talking about it. Got and it. Then it was like, all right, I'll give a month notice. Like, I'm not going to do this anymore. And they weren't thrilled, I think. So my father is a CPA. So I sort of worked every summer for him and just have a little bit of experience with numbers.
Yeah.
And they wanted me to stay on, and they offered me basically, like, an education plan to, like, learn on the job. So I wouldn't have to be an assistant, be like an analyst. And that was like the, nope, I'm out.
Except,
thank you, but no.
Yeah. Well, except you're also, like, if you do that, you end up, you go from making X amount of dollars to, like,
right,
and you know, making $700,000 a year, you know, it's
maybe not that,
or whatever, you know, I'm just
taking a zero off at least.
But still, I mean, relative to a music major's career,
right? So
prospects,
it was like, wow, this is awesome. I'm glad that you think I'm worth this or have this value, but I'm not going to do that. So I went and did the risky thing, and
I've never quit anything. And that word means, that word has terrible connotations, I think, and unfortunately so, because quitting implies, like, you've given up. But in fact, quitting can actually be a proactive.
Right. So what else would you call it?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I would say being, well, it's just too long. It's a good word. It just works. It's one word. It's quick.
Yeah.
But
it's mic drop. I'm out.
Yeah. Quit. Yeah. Did you Jerry Maguire? Did you take someone's goldfish and who's coming with me? Everybody just sat at their desk.
No.
So then talk to me about, the morning you got up and went to a bakery, how does that decision process work? How did that go? Like, walk me through that day.
Like my first job?
Literally walk me through the day you went in and, like, just walk in, you walked in a kitchen and asked for a job.
Yeah. So, well, first I went online on Craigslist because that's the only resource I knew of at the time to find jobs like that. So I looked at all the restaurants. I gave myself a radius, like, distance from my apartment, travel time, and, like, interest level, basically. And I found Dirty French, which is just up Ludlow. So it was, you know, a 10-minute walk.
Dirty French is the name of the restaurant. Okay.
And they were hiring, they said, all departments, like, walk-in interview. I didn't even have to send anything ahead of time. I could just show up with my printed resume, like, super green. You know, I don't even have kitchen shoes. I didn't know what those were yet.
What are kitchen shoes?
Right? It's just, like, rubber soles where you won't slip if there's grease on the floor.
So Crocs are not good.
No, Crocs are great.
Really?
Yeah.
I have a pair of Crocs. Well, I guess love Crocs. I need to get a new pair of Crocs. I have Crocs that are like 8 years old. And if they get a little bit wet and mm-hmm. I walk in inside, it's like I'm on ice skates.
Well, so, okay, they're a little old. So
yeah, I need to get them retreaded.
yeah. Or maybe just find new ones.
Yeah, but they're
you retread Crocs?
I'll figure it out. I'll make it happen.
Just take an X-Acto knife.
And yeah, just like some sandpaper or something. I'll revolutionize Crocs. I'm gonna put them out of business because people are gonna realize you can just redo them. Yeah. Anyway, continue.
So I walked in, and I think I was on the later end. They gave a 2-hour window, like open interviews, and I was just at the end of it. And there was no one in the restaurant. They were not open for lunch, so it was me and the executive pastry chef, who was the one hosting the interviews for all departments, just sitting in the dining room. And she maybe sat with me for 2 minutes. And when I said I had open availability and could start the next day, she was like, okay, see you at 10. And I'm like, do I bring anything? What do I do? Are you sure I'm allowed? Like asking whatever question I could think of. Mm-hmm. And she's like, just black shoes. Like, black shoes? Okay, I have black sneakers. And then I show up in black sneakers and I get screamed at because they're not kitchen shoes. No one told me that.
Mm-hmm. When you say screamed at, what is that? Like you?
I mean, you've seen it in the music industry as well, I'm sure.
Seen what?
Where a person, like a manager or like a person who is leading something, mm-hmm. you know, does not have a very good temper.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of educating a person on what they're doing wrong, it's just like
screaming,
berating and screaming. Yeah.
The kitchen industry, and Bourdain talked about this, like he was very illuminating or shined a light on this, but also oddly embraced the complexities of that mm-hmm. culture in a way that it's complex.
Mm-hmm.
But kitchens are not democracies.
No.
They are dictatorships mm-hmm. or autocracies, depending on how many people are at the top of the food chain.
Yeah.
My wife and I went to Stone Barns. Is it Blue Hill?
At Stone Barns, yeah.
Amazing meal. And we went back and it's like 19 courses or something. You go back for one of them, they take you in the kitchen and they have a little place setting there and you're watching them prepare everything. And there's people sort of obsessively shaving the skins off of cherry tomatoes and all of this like crazy, just obsession to detail. And this one guy, he like his job in the line was to put sesame seeds or something on something, and he takes them and he does the like Salt Bae thing, and he's not entertaining for anybody. He's just it's by himself and he's doing the like from way above sort of thing. And
and
the head, whoever it is, the sous chef, whatever the executive chef is,
like the chef de cuisine, whoever was in charge that day,
whoever that was, just walks over and in front of me and Stephanie said, "I don't know where you saw that, but if I ever see you do that again, you're not working in this kitchen, and you're not working in any kitchen ever again. We salt things like human beings here." and I just was like, and this poor guy was like, "Yes, chef," like, and he didn't seem upset. He didn't crumble under the pressure. He just stopped doing this. And it was like, nobody questioned. That's not the way the music world works. The music world by and large is really democratic and tries to be egalitarian, with the exception of like maybe an orchestra where the conductor is sort of dictating.
Yeah.
But chamber groups don't, like if I ever did that to Adam, like he'd be like, see you later. Or if anybody ever did that to me, but in the kitchen, I mean, what's been your experience with that? I mean, there's the initial one that you had, which was sort of a trial by fire, but...
So I only worked there 3 weeks.
You did? Okay. All right. And was it because of the overall vibe?
Oh, yeah. I left in tears.
Oh, no.
Yeah, like mid-shift. I couldn't.
Are you okay to talk about why that, like, what brought you to tears? if somebody's saying something genuinely terrible,
I'd be talking about it. Okay. Yeah. So my first day there, I thought, like, oh, I'll get some training. You all be with like a teacher figure or with this person that hired me who runs the department. But usually people on the executive level are not in doing production every day. You know, they're managing a team. Maybe they're managing teams at multiple restaurants. So they're in the office or, like, all over the place. And I got paired with the only other pastry cook at the time who went to school for it, you know, had some education and was like proud of what she did. And I think she was a little bitter, like a chip on her shoulder that, you know, they hired some literal no one off the street who doesn't even know, like, which knife is what yet.
Imagine if you had gotten a job playing with the New York Phil, right? Yeah. And you walk in and they're just like, we also hired another section percussionist. And now, she is a professional baker. She went to school for baking, but she has a passion for music.
Exactly.
She loves it. Right. Has loved the triangle since a 3-year-old. That would be infuriating.
Yes. So I didn't blame her. Yeah. But I did my best to be polite and just shadow her, like, and learn through watching and not get in her way, basically. And I did an okay job, but she decided that she just didn't want me there and would sort of, like, sabotage things, like, throw things away that I had made just so I'd have to do it all over again.
Like, you would see her throw things away?
And she would tell me.
That she threw it away?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you would make it. So, like, you made a loaf of bread and...
Enough, like, sheets of cake to make, like, maybe 5-layer cakes where you cut it out of bigger pieces. And I put them in the freezer so that the next day we could form all the cakes for this, like, big party or whatever. And the next day they were gone. She's like, oh, yeah, they didn't look good. I tossed them. But why didn't you tell me? Because now we have no cake. Like,
and it was just because she didn't, like,
yeah,
she just
didn't want me there. So, yeah.
So you left.
She won. I left. Yeah.
Is she still there, do you think?
I have no idea.
You don't care.
No.
All right. So where'd you go after that 3.5 weeks?
After that, I got a job at, also right up the street, at what was Baby Cakes. Now it's called Erin McKenna's Bakery. It's basically like a vegan donut shop. But they just needed a part-time morning mixer. So it was much simpler. It wasn't like fine dining anything. It just, I would have to go in for 4 hours in the morning before they open and just mix their dough. That's okay. So a lot simpler, less pressure, and everyone was very kind. Yeah.
How did you deal with, how did you not just throw in the towel after the somebody treating you the way that you were treated at the first place? How did you not, like, when you left that place, where you were like, okay, this has got to be an outlier. This can't be the way every place works. I'm going to try again.
Well, like, from, you know, just reading, like you said, Anthony Bourdain and just other outlets that have talked about the kitchen environment, I was like, okay, this isn't unheard of. It definitely happens to people. I'm not special, you know, and I still really like what I'm doing, so I'm going to try and do it at least one more time.
Yeah.
You know.
Why is the culture in the kitchen like that? I mean, while I was sitting there watching that particular moment at Blue Hill, you know, I'm out, like, you're watching the sausage made, or you're seeing an engine churn. I mean, you can see a beautiful, like, Lexus going down the road, but inside there's violence happening in that engine to make that beautiful piece of machinery move. And I'm curious, from your end, where does that originate and how does that start?
I think it comes from, food is so immediate. Like, when you're learning a piece of music, you're practicing it for days or weeks or months if you're in school. And, you know, at each rehearsal, hopefully you're not going to get screamed at if you make one wrong note or one mistake. There's like a process to it, and then you have your final presentation and result being a performance where it's much higher stakes, obviously, but you've had so much time to get there.
Right.
Whereas the food you're making today is for today, and then it's gone. So if you fuck it up today...
You can swear, it's fine. If you fuck it up today, it's done. So
if it's not good today, then that reflects on the boss.
Right.
So I think... It's just wanting to get across the fact that, like, there are no do-overs, really, and you have to do it the same way every single day.
Consistency for, yes, there's the health concerns. Your stuff has to be cooked right. Otherwise, if somebody gets sick.
Yeah.
It's the Jack in the Box, that fast food chain. It's like, as a kid, I will never eat at a Jack in the Box. And it's like, they had one, it may be more complicated than that, but it's like they had one bad week. And then you're tainted forever. And it's like, I imagine a Blue Hill, like, someplace, maybe they get a bad review for the way their sesame seeds looked on their plate. That's not the end of the world. But it's like, if somebody messes up the preparation of some dish, like an egg dish or something, where it's just slightly undercooked, or a meat dish that, or some whatever, yeah. and somebody gets violently ill, it's game over, yeah. at least temporarily, for a place like, even for a place like Blue Hill, which has such a ridiculous reputation and Michelin stars everywhere. Like, mm-hmm. it's, I you know, in hindsight, I can understand why.
Yeah, it's the stakes are high. It's definitely not the best form of teaching, but it's efficient.
Well, it's definitely not the, I agree, I don't think it's the best form of teaching, but it's kind of the only way of teaching in it. Well, at Blue Hill, in terms of, like, you can study, it definitely came out wrong what I just said.
He could have gone up to that cook and said, I don't think you're doing this in a good way. I'd like you to do it this way.
And do you think the results would have been the same?
I think now, yes. That's becoming more popular. Mm. Yeah. Because of that transparency, and more people are wanting to be in the kitchen and see behind the scenes.
Right.
No one's getting away with that crap anymore.
Right. No. I think if I had taken a video of that moment, I mean, it definitely wouldn't have been like a nationwide controversy, but I think there definitely would have been some people taken aback by the way another human being is talking to another human being. Yeah. But, and again, I'm playing the devil's advocate here, so, you know, throw something at me if I'm off base, because I'm on your side. I'm just questioning, like, there was a very militaristic aspect.
Mm-hmm. Oh, chef means, like, boss, basically. Like,
what, is that the literal?
In French. Yeah, it comes from, like, a military tradition. They structured the kitchen to be sort of like, an outfit? I don't even know what you call it.
A battalion or a platoon or something?
That's a word, yeah. but so it's supposed to be like that.
Yeah. There's people on the front line. Like the dude doing the sesame, he's the first person in the line getting shot
bottom
by
the totem pole. That's the cooks.
He's the one getting shot by the archers as they're trying to take the castle. Mm-hmm. And the chef de cuisine is on the horse behind everybody.
Mm-hmm. Just calling out orders. Like, usually they're what's called like the expediter, not the expediter, but they'll be just reading tickets off. So like, I need 5 pastas. I need 3 salad. Like, they just stand there and shout orders.
And have they gone through the same sort of boot camp set? Like,
typically, they'll have to be a line cook for years and years and years until someone sees something in them, and now you can be a sous chef, so you can manage these 5 people.
Yeah.
But I'm still managing you plus 4 of you. Mm. You know. Yeah.
So you're sort of, you have to earn your stripes. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, stripes are complicated, and the way people want you to earn your, I mean, I think like as a teacher, I have high expectations, and I'm constantly trying to like, there are the moments where I just want to be like, don't ever do that again.
Mm-hmm.
We don't do that here.
Right.
Act like I feel like what he could have said to that guy is like, hey, we're not Salt Bay. Act like you've been here before.
Right.
And that would have been like, oh, okay, I'm not on Instagram right now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not trying to get people to my restaurant by oversalting everything.
Right.
I'm just putting sesame seeds on. I don't need to put any extra juice on this. Yeah. You know, just do that. But yeah, it just, I think as a teacher, I have to hold back sometimes, because sometimes the quickest way to the result isn't the healthiest way.
Right.
All the time.
Right.
All
the time. It's fast, but it's not necessarily
the best. Yeah. And sometimes, depending on the person, like, you strike me as a type of, I mean, just the very fact that you dealt with that lady who did what she did to you and then walked out with your head up and figured it out.
I have never done that and will never do that.
But it's because you're the type of person that doesn't crumble under adversity, you know, like you.
Well, I did.
You didn't go on to like work at a McDonald's. Like you learned from it. You learned what not to do, but you definitely didn't crumble under, you took the punch, as I guess what I should say, like as a.
The sad thing is though, it feels like crumbling, because it just feels like, why? Why does anyone have to do this to another human? Like,
it's insecure.
It's not necessary, but it happens all the time.
It's insecurity.
Yeah.
I mean, and I would be lying if I said I was immune to that. I mean, there's some days in my life where something happens and I react because I'm insecure, and it buys time. That's all it does. Like, you know, you're not. That person, I don't think that person is, I'll bet that person's probably not a genuinely bad person. You know, the day that she threw away your cakes, who the hell knows what was going on in her private life? Who the hell knows what conversation she had with her boss?
Mm-hmm.
Her boss may have come in and be like, these are the best cakes I've ever seen in my life. This person, who is this person?
Right.
You know, And then this person, and then that woman is looking at her entire career going down the tubes because of a person who's passionate about cakes. It sort of hit it out of the park. Like, I can, if I try to put the hat on, I can understand why somebody would act that way. Yeah. And so then in myself, when I feel those emotions coming and I'm only acting out of, like, insecurity, I try to head it off. But I'm, you know, I make mistakes. Mm-hmm. You know, in my, are, do you have anybody other than me in a bit here, how to make cinnamon rolls? Do you have anybody under your tutelage now?
Yes.
And how is that going?
It's good. I really like teaching, actually. I have two bakers that work. They're my employees, technically. Mm-hmm. Like, I trained them, and I set their schedule and tell them what to do every day, basically. But aside from that, I've been doing twice a month, like, amateur classes at the restaurant, like on dark hours, basically. Mm-hmm. So I'll do, you know, classes about, like, let's make a pie, or this is how you make a baguette, or this is how you make a Danish pastry, and teach like 16 people at a time.
And you organize this, or the restaurant does this, and you are just like, or you started this?
Yeah. Yeah. Sweet. They have the space, and there's nothing going on. We're not open for lunch on Saturdays, so I go in and I teach.
That's amazing. Yeah. And how, the bakery that you're at now is what?
The name of it?
Or the, yeah, the restaurant that you work. You said there's a bakery in the back that...
Basically, it, the restaurant is called Vaucluse.
Okay.
It's a French brasserie, very large, similar to like a Balthazar.
Oh, yeah,
in size.
Yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm. So the kitchen is also quite big, especially for New York City standards. Mm-hmm. And when they built the kitchen, they decided they wanted really good quality, fresh bread made in-house. And that's actually very uncommon in New York because you need a special oven to make bread.
What kind of oven do you need to make bread?
Basically, like a pizza oven, like when you see like the stone deck, like really wide, and then also not so tall. But you also need like a steam injection. So most restaurants, also just because of space, will like buy bread from what's called a commissary, basically a factory. Mm-hmm. That makes bread for 60 restaurants, you know, or 200 restaurants or like that.
There's a couple bakeries up near where I live that I see the truck pull up. Like, they don't make the bake at all. Like, you walk in the bakery and the illusion is that they've made everything there.
Yeah.
But that truck comes at 5 in the morning when no one is there and drops it all off.
That's most cases.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, but you made a loaf of bread in this oven. Is that a pizza oven with steam injection?
It's not, but I had my cast iron Dutch oven, and I baked it in that, so that creates a steam chamber. So I can only bake one at a time, unless I have multiple cast iron pots with lids.
We're getting into the inside baseball on steam, like bread and stuff. Like, what?
So why steam?
Why steam? What is the science behind? We talked a little bit as we were setting up about like wine and bread. My wife has comment on this too, because she's a Lutheran pastor, that wine and bread are kind of the two fundamental staples of human existence. And I'm saying that with very tertiary knowledge of the history of human existence. But can you talk a little bit about why that is the case, and what is the science behind bread? Why bread? Why has bread been such a staple for humans?
Bread, can sustain you just because you've got protein, you've got fiber, you've got vitamins and minerals, you've got carbohydrates. It's kind of like a really neat package. And bread, like the traditional way, like where it's naturally fermented, like before you could buy yeast at the store, everything was sourdough, technically, just because sourdough means you're like using wild yeast to ferment your dough as opposed to commercial yeast.
Okay. Does that affect the taste?
Yeah.
How does that affect the taste?
So that's why it's called sourdough. So it'll have like a tang to it.
And wild yeast gives it the tang?
So not the yeast, but it's actually this bacteria, Lactobacillus. I never say it right. Because I never say it out loud, so I really
Just say it. I'll assume it's right. So, I don't know.
Lacto or bacilli or bacilli.
Okay.
It's basically like lactic acid that sort of forms with the sourdough culture that you're growing. But the same way, like when you make wine, right? You're crushing grapes, mm-hmm. and unless you're adding extra yeast to it, like the grapes ferment on their own because, you know, there's a lot of sugar mm-hmm. In the grape juice, but also there is just yeast in the air that lands on the skins of the grape. So that goes into the crush. And that's like a wild fermentation.
Which is why if you open a bottle of wine, it will continue. If you just let it sit there, it will continue to ferment.
It'll keep going and turn to vinegar.
Right.
Yeah.
Because there's natural yeast within the wine. Mm-hmm. But bread...
So bread needs yeast to leaven it. And then using a sourdough version of that, like yeast... just it basically helps break down what is in the bread, so the wheat essentially it's breaking it down for you before you ingest it. It's much more easier on your body to eat that way.
Yeah, because right now there's in the way people are talking about diets and mm-hmm. food, like bread is sort of it's like the local gang member. Like, you just are like, you know, don't hang out with bread. Like
everyone hates gluten, but no one knows what it is.
Right. So what is gluten and why?
It's just a protein.
Okay. Why has it got such a rap these days?
Because, so all that bread that you're seeing trucked in to the bakery mm-hmm. By your house, right, was made within, like, really massive machines, very, very fast. Probably mixed to shape to bake within 2 hours. Mm-hmm. And they're using commercial yeast and pumping in extra gluten, essentially.
Why?
'Cause that helps speed up everything. So the more gluten, or I like to call it, so the more protein in a wheat flour that mm-hmm. you're using to make bread, the stronger the dough will be, meaning it'll rise so much faster because it can really... capture all the gases.
Got it. It can hold itself up under the weight of whatever air and stuff. So like,
when you're buying bread, you're kind of buying air, you know, that's like trapped in there.
Yeah.
But the higher in gluten, the stronger it'll be, so you can make the bread happen faster. But then you're skipping fermentation process, and so the bread is not easily digestible. Plus gluten on its own, your body can't digest it.
Where does gluten on its own appear in nature? Is there other like gluten bushes?
No. So these companies will combine flour and water, mm-hmm. which basically activates the protein in flour to become that elasticity, mm-hmm. that gluten structure. And then once it's mixed, they'll then dehydrate it. So it's like powder, and then they'll strip away, like chemically strip all of the carbohydrates and minerals off of the gluten structure. So you're just left with this like protein powder. And then they'll use that as an additive, like to evaporate bread.
Just a speed thing.
Mm-hmm.
So the bread you're making, how does one, I mean, if I'm walking into a bakery, how do I know if what I'm buying is bread that is easily digestible versus bread that is not?
You can ask.
Really? What should I say? What should I ask? It's like going into a wine store. Like, everybody's like, well, you just tell them what kind of wine you like. It's like, that's an intimidating place to ask an opinion on.
So you can ask what kind of flour they're using.
Okay.
Because generally, my bakery, if someone asked me, I'd be so excited to tell you that I only use stone milled flour, like local grains. I'm not using additives. I would say that if I'm not, basically. And... you could actually ask, do you use vital gluten in your bread? Because that's what it's called.
Vital is the artificial or this the synthetic, man-made.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Okay. And will most places have the sort of like, I mean, you are very knowledgeable about this stuff. If I walk into any bakery and just like, are you using vital gluten? Well, most of them will they just look at me like I'm crazy? I mean,
if you ask a salesperson, they'll probably be like, what? But if there's a baker on site, like they'll know because they're mixing the dough every day.
Okay. Yeah. What is your, do you see bread making a comeback?
I do.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Good. Why do you say that? Because it definitely took a hit for a while. I feel like it's coming out of it. And oddly, I feel like the vegans might have saved bread because it's, at least for me, because, well, like, if you just say something's vegan, like, people would give it a pass. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, this is, it's a vegan cookie. It's good for me. Except.
It's not.
It's just sugar.
Yeah. Like,
the vegan movement is hilarious to me. And I, listen, I'm not a hater. I don't, you know, if you do it for ethical reasons or whatever, but the idea that, like, oh, I'm eating vegan.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. You're just eating a bucket of sugar every mm-hmm. time you eat a cookie. Yeah. But I think it has given people other opportunities for consuming things that they love and not feeling bad about it. Mm-hmm. But it feels to me like I shouldn't feel bad about it as long as I know.
Yeah.
As long as I'm educated. So from your standpoint, how are you seeing the sort of education of society as far as food culture going? And where do you see this sort of... bread. We were talking about Tom Papa earlier. Mm-hmm. Like, he wrote a whole book about it, and he's like all over these podcasts talking about bread, and he's a famous comedian. Like, he's doing the Lord's work as far as bread is concerned, too. Yeah. Where do you see your role in that, and how do you see it going in the next 10 years?
So I don't see it so much coming back in terms of like a health food choice. Mm-hmm. I see it more. People want to do something with their hands. They want to feel like they're making something. Mm. Because that the classes that I'm teaching, a lot of people are drawn to it just so that they can be like, look what I made. Like, you can touch this and smell it. And it's not just, right, you know, right. posts on Instagram or whatever.
Right.
And obviously you still take the photo and post it
sure, of course,
to brag to everyone. But yeah, it's a lot of like something tactile. So I see people being really drawn to that. And because there's fermentation involved and it's, I mean, it's still like a true good sourdough loaf is like a 3-day process if you're doing it, like giving it the time it really needs, mm-hmm. but that's much faster than, you know, doing a batch of beer or doing wine or anything like that. So it's kind of the fastest option where you're using that fermentation science, you know, if you're into that kind of thing mm-hmm. and you can see it start to finish. Like from your own hands.
Well, what would you say to someone like myself who is, I feel I mentioned this too. Like I have no fear of walking on stage at Carnegie Hall and playing mm-hmm. a really hard piece of music. Doesn't scare me at all. It's work, but I don't get nervous about that stuff anymore.
Yeah.
But the minute my wife asked me to like cut something up and put it in a pan and stir it, I have really intense anxiety. I feel like, and I think it comes from what you mentioned earlier, like the immediacy of it. Mm-hmm. I can't work my way out of a burnt steak.
Nope.
I can't fake that. I can fake a wrong note. I can fake being at the wrong instrument and realizing it and just playing my steel drum part on the xylophone or something because I just went to the wrong spot.
Yeah.
But I cannot fake a burnt steak. Like how, do you have students who deal with this as you're
working with them? So it's preparation. Like, are you scared of it because you don't know how to do it?
Yes.
So, have you ever Googled a recipe?
No.
Okay.
Okay, but so. Right, okay, but here's my... Okay, all right, great. So, I prepared. You have two cats, and we're listening to one of them chiming in.
He's dreaming.
What... Yeah, okay, but it's like, but once the clock starts... Like, okay, once
so that's the thing, though. Like, if you're worried about that, then you're not really prepared.
That's a very good point.
Because, so you read your recipe, you have your list of ingredients and your steps, like your instructions. But if you're really reading the ingredients, you'll see, like, okay, I need A, B, and C, reading the instructions. I need A, B, and C ingredients right at the very beginning, but then as that's going, I need to add the rest in or do something like... where I can't stop, you know, I can't press pause and turn the heat off and come back to it. It all has to be ready to go. So you really need to internalize the steps and measure out all your ingredients ahead of time.
So like practicing a steel drum solo.
Sure.
You have to prepare.
Yeah.
You can't just sight read a recipe.
You should know like what chords are coming up probably. Like,
all right.
Or just be really, really freaking good. Like, I don't know. Right.
Well, I'm not the second. I know. I think the first I need, having my chords written out ahead of time is a good. Yeah. It's, and Stephanie too. Like she made scones the other day and she does not do baking. And I think some of it is she just doesn't eat a ton of baked goods. And so it's not her instinct to make baked goods, but, there, I think, because there's a difference in preciseness from baking to like cooking mm-hmm. a piece of chicken or a piece of lamb. Like,
that's because of time.
Yeah.
So you can season something as you go. If it's, you know, like you said like roasting mm-hmm. a leg of lamb or something. But when you're baking something, once it goes in the oven, it's done. Your work is done, and you're just, you know, waiting using on, a heating element.
You're waiting on science to do what it does.
Yeah. So you really need to have your proportions down. So actually, this is kind of a cool segue because, like, bakers don't use recipes. They use formulas.
Really?
Yeah. There's this thing called baker's percentage where it's just math, and you're using a sliding scale where if you're doing one loaf or 100 loaves, it's the same. Flour equals 100%, water equals 70%. Like,
it's not exponential. It's like if you need one cup to make one loaf and you're making two loaves, then you need two cups.
Right. But cups being volume, that's not super easy to mm-hmm. scale up and down.
Math
for that. So I have this scale out just to show you. Everything's done by weight.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so that way, you know, I can just have one big bowl and be like, all right, I need 5 pounds of flour for this recipe. So I can just weigh it all out by literally weighing it, you know, instead of scooping, I need 30 cups.
Yeah. I've never not done any baking without like cups and teaspoons. And
When you're baking at home, like doing by volume makes a lot of sense because, you know, it's very, very small scale.
Mm-hmm.
And usually like, you're consistent at least with yourself. So your tablespoon today is your tablespoon tomorrow. But if I'm giving you a recipe, my tablespoon may not be your tablespoon.
What?
Well, the physical spoon that is called a tablespoon is going to be essentially the same, but maybe I level mine off exactly and maybe you don't.
Maybe I'm a heaper.
Right.
Maybe I'm more of a like a grandma, just like a little extra never hurt anybody.
Right. Well, it doesn't, but if you want a recipe to be exactly the same.
Right. Which is a goal more so for restaurants and bakeries than it is for my grandma.
Yeah.
Who's just looking to make her grandkids go to sleep with a lot of belly.
I can actually show you real quick.
She pulled out a notebook.
Yeah. So
a Moleskine on steroids.
Like, this is a bread recipe.
Okay.
Where it's percentages. And then I decided how much I want. Like, I want to make 1 kilo of this dough.
Mm-hmm.
And then I use that to determine how many grams of each ingredient.
You need a calculator for this?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is way different than what I feel like most people assume baking. Oh my God, this looks like out of a beautiful mind.
Yeah, it's math. It's simple math, but
that's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, before we get into first of all, we've been sitting here. Cheers. We've been talking for almost an hour and we didn't cheers. Not. And so Jeff Ang, I'm drinking some of your beautiful Oban. I hope you're okay with that. And we have some, this is not charcuterie, but what is it? What is the term for just bread and chutneys and honey?
Just bread and chutneys.
And honey.
Is there a name?
I don't know. That's what we'll call it. Did you make this bread?
Yeah.
All right. No, well, before... No. So one of the things that when I told Stephanie that... Oh, your beer is overflowing.
Yeah.
It's okay. That I told my wife, I was like, I'm going to hang with Jacqueline.
Mm-hmm.
She follows you too. And she said, you're making cinnamon rolls and you better make me a fresh batch on Christmas morning. Mm-hmm. And so you have already pre-made
the dough. Yeah.
So before Christmas, I will need to know a recipe to pre-make dough.
Yeah, I'll give it to you in cups and teaspoons.
Okay. Yeah. Give it to me in layman's terms.
Yeah.
Well, I don't have a calculator and I'm too old for that. You're going to show me how to sort of prep and make some mm-hmm. cinnamon rolls. And I'm admittedly terrified. Before we get into that, though, mm-hmm. One final sort of question. This is something I ask a lot of folks who I talk with, not necessarily bacon related. It doesn't have to be, but like, what for you is one of your biggest moments of failure that you learned a lot from, and but you would wish that you're glad it happened, but you would wish never to happen again. And that'll change, I'm sure, as you're when you get to be 60. But you're only 30 now. So what is for you?
I feel like there's already so many. That I don't know which one I should talk about. Walking out of that first job, like, I knew I couldn't handle being there, but I also felt really crappy for, like, I literally just quit, no notice. Like, I said, screw them, basically. Mm-hmm. And I felt really, really bad about that.
Like, you had let them down or you let yourself down?
Both. Mm. Like, I mean, it's disrespectful. You know, they gave me a chance, and I flaked. Basically,
I've only heard one side of the story, but it sounded like you had a slight justification in.
Okay, but still, like you showed up.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
I think
it's
if you
not
were,
like I was a kid.
I think if you were
23, 24, like. I mean, yes, a kid, but not a.
But I think if you'd have walked out of a gig, I got you or something,
right.
And just told somebody like, see ya, yeah.
So you get,
it's not what you're supposed to do, but it's
right. Like
it's what
I
you did.
Felt guilt.
Yeah. So well, how did that help you? In that moment?
Like promising myself I would never do it again, even if it was bad again. But just like pushing on to try somewhere new.
Mm-hmm.
But I've had a lot of weird, bad experiences. Like the first job I was offered where I would be the boss, like the head baker.
Mm-hmm.
About 6 months in, I had already trained an assistant baker because I'm not going to work 7 days a week forever. I trained them in my image and wound up getting replaced by that person just because they wanted to save a buck. So that was like shocking and felt really bad.
Because the other person was cheaper to have around. Yeah.
Yeah. So they basically used me for my knowledge. And it felt like, okay, am I not worth like anything? Like what, maybe like, am I in the wrong industry? Cause at that point I've been doing it for like 5 years and like, what is going on? So that felt really bad. But that led me to another spot where I thought, okay, I'm going to run this bakery now.
Mm-hmm.
And then they were brand new. They hadn't opened yet.
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted to cut some corners in terms of what would pass for health code in the building structure. Because it was like brand new under construction. And I decided, no, like I'm going to stand up for what I think is right. And appropriate, and they're like, okay, then you could go work someone else. Yeah.
Well, now you're that leads me to my last question. Where are you you are working your way to owning your own bakery now? How's that process going, and where do you see that, hopefully best case scenario, in 5 years?
Now that I'm working at a place where they give me creative freedom and like power to make small decisions, at least in my own department. So I feel like I've learned so much just by doing, how to cost out recipes, you know, how to deal with vendors and just being responsible for other people and making sure that there's a job for them to show up to. And like the dream job for me is running a small bakery that, you know, is mine, and sort of like, yes, the customer is super important, but I feel like the employees are also so important, and just the environment you're creating and that little bit of, you know, education to the masses, whatever I can do. I want to be a spokesperson for like eating good food and tasty food, but, you know, making like ethical and environmental choices through that, if that makes any sense.
Totally, yeah.
But also like making really good pizza and whatever.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, before we get into the baking, do you have any final like where can we find you on Instagram and find out about your work and your restaurants and sort of what your passions are? Where can we find you?
If you want to follow me, my Instagram handle is at Baker Jack, JACQ. But I also have another handle, Party Bus Bake Shop. And that is sort of like the long-term project.
Okay.
Up and coming, to be determined.
The Party Bus is a sort of overarching theme.
That it is.
And Alex and some other folks.
So Jeff, my husband, grew up with this minivan, and we kind of adopted it, mm-hmm. After we moved in together. We used it for gigs and just mm-hmm. for whatever we needed. And it turned into like the road trip van. So we would just pile in as many people as could fit and go camping or skiing or wherever. And I think that really helped solidify this group of friends that has become like second family.
Mm-hmm.
So when I was trying to think of a name, the van has also died since, so it was like R.I.P. rest in peace.
Yeah, R.I.P.
Yeah, I miss that van, but.
But your hashtags, you also do a lot of traveling and mm-hmm. Food tourism and whatnot. Yeah. Your hashtags are, was it Party Bus A-Go-Go?
We went, 10 of us went to Italy. Now it's last summer. So like a year and a half ago, for a month.
It's amazing. So
that was fun. Yeah.
Well, Jacqueline, it's been a real pleasure talking to you, and I definitely have learned more about baking and sort of just what this world is like. I am the older I get, the more fascinated I am just by like people doing things they enjoy doing. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be music. And I'm really curious I'd love to check in with you in like a year just to see where this stuff is headed and just have like regular guests who I check in with and sort of, I don't know, just track where things are headed and see what new things you're working on.
Cool.
So anyway, thank you so much for your time.
Oh, can I say one thing?
You absolutely can.
So
yes, sure.
I try and listen to as many episodes as I can of your podcast.
Thank you for that.
I'm still catching up, but I was listening to the one with you and Gray and you need to retract.
I need to retract? What do I need to retract?
So you were talking about Gilmore Girls?
Oh, all right. Tell me what I need to retract. I haven't watched a single episode of Gilmore Girls,
okay.
To be clear.
So it is like my Bible. So yeah. I watch it when I'm sad, uh-huh. when I'm happy, uh-huh. and I put it on while I'm cleaning or whatever.
Okay.
Because they're very, very chatty and it's just a nice background mm-hmm. type.
Yeah.
But the Netflix special was 2 years ago. It's not currently on anymore.
Which Netflix special? What did I say exactly that... I have a hard time remembering everything.
Oh, no, it was just something about like, oh, it's new again, and it's back on the air, and it's not. I wish it was.
Oh, well, I thought, wasn't there a read, or was it?
2 years ago.
Oh, my God, I'm so out of it. All right, well, I apologize. I retract my statement out of ignorance. I don't stand behind the Gilmore Girls. I haven't watched them. I don't know. But
I kind of just thought it'd be fun to put you on the spotlight.
Well, the podcast is called Concert Honesty, so yeah. I appreciate your honesty. I will definitely officially retract it.
No.
Well, let's start.
Let's make some cinnamon buns. Okay.
Are we making legit like Cinnabuns?
Sure.
Because I feel like Cinnabuns. Let's be clear between you and me. Be honest. When you see a Cinnabon, maybe this is a good place to end.
No, they're delicious.
They're awesome.
But I mean, I don't have the recipe, so you can say it's a cinnamon bun, but it's
okay.
Not
but,
a Cinnabon.
But can you dispel? Do they make good cinnamon buns? From your standpoint as a baker.
Yes, if you only are thinking about taste. Yes, 100%.
That's like the best backhanded compliment you could give. Like, if you're only obsessed about the way they taste.
Well, are you worried about, like, what you're eating? Maybe?
Well, I think if you're in line in a Cinnabon, the answer to that is definitely no.
Okay, so they're great.
Your food, your hierarchy of choices of like, you're in the airport, you want to kill yourself already. And you're just like, there's a Jim Gaffigan, I think, is a comedian. He talks, I think he says like, what they should have is a Cinnabon thing where you're just like, the Cinnabon with the extra icing or the 9mm with one bullet.
Yeah.
I'll take the 9mm. That's going to be better for me than the Cinnabon.
Yeah.
All right, let's make some cinnamon buns.
Okay.
So what are you doing here? What's the...
Okay, so I figured we'll walk through what mixing the dough is like,
okay.
and then we'll do, like, the TV magic fast forward to the dough that
I like TV
already
magic.
Exists. Yeah. So I have all my dry and all my wet.
All right. What's in the
scaled
dry?
Scaled out. So it's flour, salt and sugar,
mm-hmm.
and yeast.
Yeast. And
This is instant yeast. I have a jar of it.
And you don't need, with this type of cook, you don't need a starter yeast. Like, what's
no,
the, why
no,
do you
this isn't a sourdough, just because, like, if you're having a cinnamon bun, you probably don't want it to be sour.
Probably.
Yeah.
But is sourdough the only one you need a starter yeast? Like,
mm-hmm.
and that's the only type of bread you would need that for?
Yeah, well, so think of sourdough not as a type of bread, but a type of baking.
Oh, okay.
Like, you have baking soda and baking powder and, like, baker's yeast or brewer's yeast or whatever like this,
mm-hmm.
and then you have sourdough. It's just another choice.
Oh, got it. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And this, what is that? Is that your starter?
Yeah. It's funky. You want to smell.
It smells like dough. I mean...
Yeah. So what? It is. I mean, it's flour and water.
Do you have
That's
to...
It.
Do you have to... Do you make a starter? Like, or how does that... How do you get to that?
So, to start from scratch, you just start with, like, flour and water.
Mm-hmm.
Let it sit out, like, warm.
Mm-hmm.
Like, inoculate, basically. So, you're trying to capture that yeast that's floating around in the air, that's like on our skin, that's
oh,
everywhere.
Okay.
And giving it an environment to like have food, because it
mm-hmm.
basically converts the starch into sugar and eats the sugar.
Mm.
And then the byproduct, or like it like burps out like
mm-hmm.
carbon dioxide and alcohol.
Okay.
So you want the yeast to be active and happy and alive and eating. And once it's done, like this will what's called die or go dormant. And then it's not like useful anymore.
And that's not dead.
No, this is...
How can
like,
you tell
nice.
If it's dead or dormant?
It would lose its bubbles and then
okay.
kind of, like, separate where there'd be, like, a layer of liquid on top.
Oh, because it's bubbly because it's eating and farting out.
Yeah, it's alive. It's nice and happy and, yeah.
Okay. And is that from an original, like...
This one I took a little piece from when I was in school and we were using, like, the school sourdough culture.
So that's got still some OG culture in it.
Yeah, this one's about, like, 12 years old, but... They've dug up, like you were talking about, the clay pots
uh-huh.
and whatever, where there'll be little dust residue,
mm-hmm.
and you can, like, bring it back to life.
From, like how many, how long ago? Like, what's the
thousands
oldest...
years.
Whoa, what's the oldest living, like, starter culture?
I don't know.
That's a totally
really, really old.
That's amazing.
Like,
okay.
as old as you can find.
I mean, they're like,
it's just dehydrated, but it's not dead. You can't really kill it.
Yeast,
yeah.
It's like yeast and cockroaches are the two that like,
yeah.
they've figured it out.
Yeah, it's a fungus.
Well, it's like grapevines, too. They will graft parts of a grape,
exactly.
of the grapevine from farms that they're
yeah.
either tearing down, and they'll move it. Like,
mm-hmm.
I know a lot of the Long Island, studying that, I did spend a week out of Long Island, going to wineries, and they, it's like a lot of their grapevines were grafted from places in Tuscany. And,
yeah, because, like, you almost have to, because to start from scratch.
Right,
you know,
but it's like...
You've seen your citizen before you can even grow grapes on it.
But, like, genealogically speaking...
Yeah. Old.
It's from the old world,
yeah.
which is kind of rad.
Yeah.
Kind of cool. All right, so we've got the dry ingredients. What's
yeah.
the wet ingredient?
Eggs, milk, and oil, or melted butter. This is oil. This is
okay.
easier.
What's the, does the taste affect if it's butter versus oil?
I mean, butter tastes a little better than vegetable oil.
Okay.
But I just figured for it being easier, we don't have to melt the butter. Skip a step.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm going to put everything all together in here in this mixing bowl. And, like, you don't need this to make it. You could do it by hand.
Okay.
You're going to sweat because you're going to really need it.
Right.
So this is faster.
How many times a day are you doing this very thing?
Honestly, what I do at my bakery is not so much this kind of, like, breads and
mm-hmm.
pastries. It's more, like, baguettes and, like, rustic...
Oh,
like
okay.
the big French country loaves,
mm-hmm.
that kind of thing. Like
okay.
for dinner service.
Oh,
so
got it. Okay.
It's very, very niche, which is why, like, it's a great job. Like, I want to go do
mm-hmm.
my own thing and a bigger variety and, you know, actually see customers come in and out.
Yeah.
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 Because, yeah, we just function as an extension of the restaurant. So it's
mm-hmm.
only what they need that we make.
Right.
Unless we're just playing around.
You don't. Oh, do you
in
get
our
to
spare
just,
time.
Do you just get to mess around sometimes and make crazy shit?
Yeah. That's the great thing about being the boss is, you know, if I know that we came in under budget on food costs, I can like, oh, let's, you know, make this for a family meal, or, you know, you need to take a cake home, go ahead, like, stay an hour after work and make it. Like,
yeah. All right. That's cool. So you just toss it all in at once.
Yeah. I like using the paddle, but if you have the hook one, that works too.
This is a kitchen, and this is also on my mom has been telling me for years that, you know, every civilized human being needs.
Do you have, like, a food processor, like, with the knife blade?
No.
No. Do you have, like, one of the handheld with the two?
Yes.
You can do that.
Okay, but this is far classier.
I mean, I grew up with those. Okay. So this is, like, new-ish.
Okay.
But, I would say using those, you would just want to be careful not to, like, burn out the motor. Mm. Just, like, watch it, and if it feels like it's struggling, stop and just use your hand.
If you smell.
Yeah, because it's not worth, like, killing your equipment for, like, this is 50 cents of dough.
Right, right. Yeah. Well, what is, these are not cheap, but there's, like, once you buy one, you don't ever need to buy another, probably.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Unless you, like, throw it down the stairs. Right. Like, I don't know. But, yeah, so just low speed, so that stuff doesn't go flying everywhere. Mm. And I'm just looking for everything to be combined, come together. So, like, I don't want to see any more dry.
Does Jeff know how to bake?
No.
Does he even try to learn? Or does he just eat whatever you've made?
So, he's weird. He's not a snacker. He doesn't like sweets. He's like, it's a meal or I'm not eating.
Really?
Yeah. Slowly but surely, I'm changing that with him. Just because I'll be like, eat this, you know? Eat it and tell me what you think now. But lately, he's been getting into cooking.
Really?
Not so much baking, yeah.
Any type of cuisine in particular that he's gravitating towards?
Just feeling like, okay, I can come home and make dinner for Jacqueline instead of buying takeout. Before we started dating, like, he could make scrambled eggs.
Do you cook? Like, do you fashion yourself a cook in addition to a baker, or is it
not like,
like
I could take a job in a kitchen as a cook? I would never be a line cook, ever.
Mm.
But I do cook a lot.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I know, like, there's also, like, within the chef world, there's, like, pastry chefs.
Right.
Are, like, very specific. Like,
I always get confused with those. People assume because I work at a French restaurant that I'm a pastry chef. But I'm not. And, you know, I'm not making ice creams or these, like, fancy sculptural cakes or I don't even know the words for some of the things, you know, because I don't do it. I really just make bread.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so we've got it mixed.
So now I just want to scrape the bottom of the bowl with a spatula to see if there's any dry that's caught.
Because
sometimes the very, very bottom will, like, sometimes you'll see flour right there in this, like, ring. But I let it go long enough, so we're good. So now I want to bump the speed up to kind of, it's shaggy right now. See, like, it doesn't really stretch at all.
And it's clumpy, but it's not
right
pulling.
So to get it more smooth and also stretchy, we have to work the gluten, the protein, because that creates basically like a web that's very like elastic.
And the gluten, as I've learned, is a natural occurring protein in the flour.
Okay, I'm gonna go probably no higher than this. Hot.
People gotta stop talking about gluten. You need to start pushing the fact that it's a protein, because protein is very popular. And so if you just put it as, like, you know.
Have you heard of, like, when you go to the grocery store, do you ever buy flour? Or, like, when you pass by, like, if you're buying pancake mix or whatever, like,
I think I've had to buy flour, but I don't think twice if it just has the letters F and L, and I don't bother reading the rest.
So there's, you can get, like, what's called all-purpose flour, or you can get self-rising flour. Okay. That just means they already put baking soda in it, or, and a lot of, like, people make biscuits, like, in the South, it's very popular, like, self-rising. But there's also cake flour and bread flour, and the distinguishing factors between those is cake flour is much lower in protein. So it can never get stretchy and tough because you want a cake to be delicate.
A little spongier.
Yeah. Whereas bread flour is like the highest in protein because you want it to be strong and really stretchy. And then all-purpose is back in the middle.
What does baking soda do? I've never understood why. And you always need such a tiny amount of it.
Yeah, like, so...
what does it do?
Because I don't use it, I haven't really looked too far into, like, the exact science of it. But it's just another leavening agent. It means it can, like, cause something to rise. It creates, you know, that reaction. And I think it's heat-related.
Okay.
Whereas something like yeast means food and time. Mm. Like, it needs the sugar to eat. And then it needs time to do that because it's... you know, it's alive. Mm-hmm. The baking soda is a chemical reaction. Like, soon as, like, you put pancakes on a hot pan, you know, pops
right,
up
right,
real
right.
quick. But that's as much as I know.
Okay. To be that's honest. More than I know.
Okay, so should be a little more stretchy now.
That looks better.
Slightly smoother. And what I would do with this is then I would then put it in, like, a little Tupperware container with some oil so mm-hmm. it doesn't get super sticky to it, and then let it rest in the fridge. For a couple hours. Like,
and I should do this the day before I make the...
You can.
But what's the... just so that on Christmas morning, I've hit it out of the park, what should be my time frame?
So, the day before, you should do this.
Mm-hmm.
So do this Christmas Eve morning.
Okay.
And then later on the day in Christmas Eve, do what we're going to do next, which is like the rolling out and filling and prepping. So then Christmas morning, you just put it in the oven.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So I'm just going to leave this because we don't need it.
So now
right
we're doing
now.
TV magic.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Need to move any of this or are we okay?
Just maybe a little because there's going to be flour here. We'll be careful.
It's not the end of the world if it gets splashed.
If you want to touch it and then feel the difference between what this is...
Should I wash my hands before I do
sure.
that?
Sure, yeah.
So what do you got planned for the holidays? Anything?
Working.
yeah, this is a fairly busy time for the food.
Yeah.
For the service industry.
Just holidays in general, I feel like people always forget that, you know, if you have the day off and you want to go out to eat, someone is working.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Stephanie is. I mean, she doesn't quite have that issue, but... we're just like, oh, what are you doing for Christmas? You're on Christmas Eve.
She's working.
I am
she's like holding
catering
service.
To hundreds of people.
Yeah.
twice in one evening.
Yeah, but yeah, I'm working Christmas Eve and Christmas Day, but a few days later, we're taking off a week and going to Cuba.
Whoa, awesome. Yeah. So going excited. To, like, going all over, going to Havana, or?
Havana, and then Vinales.
Sweet.
So we're
going to
see the tobacco fields and...
sweet. Do you smoke tobacco, or are you
no.
just going to go check them out?
Just gonna I would go ride a horse.
I love a good cigar.
Yeah.
I
like how they smell, but I don't want to. Like, I want to be around it.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't want to inhale cigars, but I want to. I love a good cigar, and so going to the tobacco fields in Cuba would be mm-hmm. rad. And also, I love good rum.
Yeah.
So anyway, if you don't post copious pictures of obscure,
I probably can't post anything until I get back because I don't know what the internet
well,
situation
I don't know. I think
is
it's,
down there.
I think it's okay. My former teacher Larry Snyder and his wife went to Cuba and
yeah,
I think it was. I mean, I think their tourism industry is.
Do
more.
They have Wi-Fi? Like, is that?
I don't know, to be
yeah.
honest. But
I think only very few like government regulated spots like town squares.
I know, like, China is definitely that way. I had some friends that just came back from China and said
yeah.
it was, like, really hard to get...
Yeah.
But a friend of mine has a... it's like a... your own personal VPN.
Oh, cool. Okay.
And so, like... but it's an app.
Mm-hmm.
And so when he opens the app, then basically his whole phone is running through that app.
Oh.
And so it's, like, his own internet provider. So he's
okay.
independent of...
that's cool.
I've never done it. I don't know what it entails. I don't know how much
it's
it costs.
A little over my head, probably.
Yeah. I think if you all wanted to have access, I think there are ways around it. I just... but,
yeah.
you know, whatever. You're in a country
it's
where the government cares
days.
About that stuff. So
yeah.
tread as you feel see fit.
Yeah. I'll just post, like, as soon as I get home. But
so
yeah.
So this is what we've just made.
Yeah, this one here. It's very, like, loose and still sticky.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, like, nice and developed, ready to go.
Okay.
And then this is... I made it this morning, so it's been chilling for a while.
Oh, yeah, it's not as sticky.
Right, it's nice and firm now.
Okay.
So we're going to take this out of here onto a floured surface. And I'm going to put a little more flour on top so that it doesn't stick to my rolling pin.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to shoot for, like, a quarter inch, or if I can get that thin.
Mm-hmm.
Might not be able to. Depends on, like, how much the dough just pulls back.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is elastic.
You mean quarter inch thick, you mean?
Yeah.
And then how wide are you trying to go? You're just trying to get it as wide as a quarter inch will give you?
I don't want to go more than, like, 12 inches in width.
Mm-hmm.
So length would be as, you know, as long as you can.
Okay.
Yeah.
Why not more than 12 inches?
Because once we put the filling on and then we're rolling them up this way, it's going to be way too big of a...
of a roll.
Unless you want, like, one massive, which you could do, but...
When I'm in an airport and I'm desperate...
Yeah.
I kind of want them just to smash all their leftover ones together and make one massive.
Well, that's monkey bread.
That's true, yes.
Okay. So this looks good to me.
Me as well.
Do you want to take a stab at it?
Sure.
Yeah.
So what
so am I doing? You're using, like, your upper body weight, not just, like, your hands. Like, use your full, like, go over it.
So I need to use my... I feel like I'm going to make it too thin now.
Yeah, it's fine.
You're like, I'll fix whatever you've done.
Thinner just means there's more of a tight, like the middle part of the cinnamon bun. That's my favorite part.
Mm-hmm.
There's more of that if it's thinner.
Oops.
It's okay.
What do you do? Just mash that back and hope that it... All right. I gotta go slower. All right.
So if you're doing this at home and that's happening, then you just put a little more flour.
It sticks. Now, should I try to get this stuff, like, even, or does that not matter?
It doesn't matter.
It's just aesthetics.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's gonna get cut off.
Alright.
So, it's totally fine.
How's this looking?
Close? It's good. Yeah.
Okay. Doesn't seem like any area is massively thicker than the other.
Yeah. The nice thing about we're just making, like, a small amount for mm-hmm. ourselves, it doesn't have to be perfect. No one's paying for it.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
This is melted butter and sugar and cinnamon. So, it's probably, like, a half a stick of butter.
Okay.
And then, like, a cup of sugar. I will write it down for you.
Yes, please put this all on one email so I can...
But it's just, you know, nice and soupy.
Mm-hmm.
And we're literally going to pour this on.
Okay.
And I'll just do a little spot. And then smooth it out like this.
And we're trying to coat the whole...
Yeah, as much as possible.
Okay.
Like, to every edge.
We can do that.
And this is called an offset spatula. Do you have something like that? No. Okay.
No, but I can...
So you can use a spoon.
I can go to Sur La Table and pick up a few. I'm happy to pro it up. You don't need to have seven. You don't have seven for me. I can do enough to...
Well, if you don't, like, a spoon is fine, you know? Whatever. And you can even just pour the whole thing. Yeah.
That's lovely.
You just use it up.
Should just sell, like, cups of this stuff. Little shot glasses.
It's like the speculoos.
With your morning coffee.
Yeah.
Just a shot of butter and sugar. Am I trying to get it all the way to the edge? Or just...
Yeah, as best you can. Like, at work we use, like, big.
So where's Jeff at right now? He's with his friends?
He's at his parents' house.
Parents' house. Where do they live?
Bay Ridge.
Perfect. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
What's he out there for? Just hanging?
He's doing a favor. So, their basement has all of our instruments that we've collected, aside from one drum set that I'm trying to sell, but I misplaced the kick drum legs. Like, and he's searching.
You think they might be there?
If they're not, I just kind of
devalued the kit a lot.
What kind of drum set is it?
It's a Gretsch from the 60s.
Then you shouldn't devalue that, even right. if it's missing its legs. If it's from the 60s?
Yeah.
Is it like a round badge? Like one yeah. of the... Okay, don't devalue that.
No, I wouldn't, but...
Yeah.
Like, I had someone here this morning looking at it.
Oh, it's here?
Yeah, it's here.
Okay. Oh. How much are you selling it for?
Trying to get $2,000.
What did they say when they looked at it?
Well, so he is a dealer, and mm-hmm. he wants to resell it, and he's like, I won't even touch it. Like, he opened everything and was looking at all the pieces, and he's like, well, if you can't find this, I don't want it.
Yeah, for him, it's yeah. he'd have to mark it down drastically if right. he's trying to resell it. And he's has to pay overhead and stuff, too.
Exactly, yeah. So he's out there looking for me.
But I mean, I imagine you can go on eBay and find those legs. Like, people who are looking... There are people who restore that stuff. And yeah. you could probably find those legs for...
I'm sure.
Fairly cheap. All right, is that...
Yeah, that's great.
Okay.
I honestly didn't even know the pieces were missing, because I haven't touched that kit in years.
So. I'd love to look at it before you go, just because I love old kits like that. Okay.
So this is good. So this is our, like, cinnamon part of the Cinnabon.
Uh-huh.
And now we roll it up. So okay. you can go from here out.
Okay.
I like to go... inwards towards myself.
Okay.
So I'll start by just pinching a little bit over.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to finish that.
Yep. You're a good teacher, Jacqueline. I'm going to take your class. What does it cost to take your class?
Like $150.
For how long?
It's 2 hours, and then they do like a lunch pairing.
Okay, and then I just keep...
So from there, yeah, like, you pinch again, and then once it gets, like, enough times pinched over, you can start to roll it.
Got it.
Oops. And then every once in a while, as I'm rolling, I'll kind of, like, pull it back up to tighten it.
Okay. How many classes have you done so far?
I do 2 a month. It's been a year.
And I imagine that's, like, you know, I think it's also... a good use of, I mean, you're using, do you have to pay rent for the space?
No, like, that's the thing. It's
because it's closed.
Right. They're not making any revenue that part of the week.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I've brought in like $30,000 for them this year that they would never, it's just nothing, you know? And that offsets the cost of my department a bit.
Do you have to pay for the supplies and stuff? I assume like, and that no. $150 covers it, or it's just like, they're just glad to have you using the space.
The $150 covers it. Like, it's still, like, a very much Valcluse presents this class, whatever. Like, it's
right.
through their marketing team. But, yeah, so, like, I'll have enough dough mixed for 16 people to do, like, this.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe on a smaller, like, this much of it.
Yeah.
And that costs $10.
That is awesome. I feel like, are other restaurants doing this, or is this like a Valcluse sort of exclusive thing?
So there's only a couple of places in the city, not restaurants, but like the Brooklyn Kitchen
mm-hmm.
does classes like this at night. Like, they do pasta and knife skills, and they'll do like cooking for one or
mm-hmm.
whatever. And Haven's Kitchen in Chelsea does this kind of thing. Brooklyn Brainery also does some cooking classes.
Do you imagine eventually that being something you do full time?
Like, no, I would like to do it. I'm not going to say if anymore. When I open a bakery,
mm-hmm.
I want to do it like once a week.
Yeah, that's cool. That's awesome. Well, you're a good teacher. So, all right. How does this?
It's great.
Look.
So no, this is your log.
This is here, indeed a log.
Yeah, we just okay. we cut the pieces out and like fill them in a pan.
Okay.
So I'm gonna get a pan.
And should I use this? What should I use to cut? Is this?
I'll get you a knife.
Sideways spatula, okay.
No, we'll have a real knife to keep it. So, like, a serrated is good for this kind of thing. Because mm-hmm. if we just go down with, like,
smash
a,
it.
Yeah, it'll smash. So, this way we can really... Look at that.
Lovely.
Yeah.
And that's one roll?
This might actually be too big, but because of the butt end is, like, missing some, we'll not use that.
What do you mean we'll not use that?
I mean, we'll fill in with it, but it's not,
put
like...
put it in there.
Yeah.
I don't have, like, Pam would be really great. I just don't have any. So,
we're going to use oil.
Yeah, I hope you don't mind getting your hands dirty. No. Like, that's just a part of the game. Let me just rub this around the edges. But if you had a spray, that would make your life much easier. Basically, if you don't do this, there'll be nothing wrong with the cinnamon buns, but the edges will stick to the pan, okay. So you'll have to lose some of it.
And these are the types of pans I should get, or any sort of metal?
If you have, like, a, I figured I'm sending you home with some, so.
Yeah, okay.
These are nice and easy and disposable, but, yeah, if you have,
like, something like this.
Yeah, okay.
Or even glass, like a brownie dish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have some stuff like that.
Yeah, like I have some square ones, but really anything that can go in the oven is fine.
Okay, can we cut these now?
Yeah.
Alright.
Yeah, so have at it and then just fill them up.
And that's about the thickness?
Yeah.
That's okay. So other than Cuba, you guys got any big party bus plans for the year coming up?
We just booked Houseboat for Labor Day of next year.
A houseboat?
Like, yeah.
Where?
Out. It's like halfway to Pittsburgh. I can't remember the town. But it's the closest houseboat rental before you hit like the Mississippi River or something. So it's like a 6-hour drive from here.
What are you going to do on a houseboat? Like old timey gambling and stuff? Like,
yeah, we sit and drink beer and swim in the lake and like play board games.
And for how long?
And grill. 3 days.
Awesome. Yeah, you guys are...
We really like each other. It's weird.
that's good.
I mean, yeah, no, it's really good.
Did you guys start dating in school, or was it afterwards?
How? We started dating
That's
summer.
Enough for one pan, you think?
Yeah. Okay. Summer before my last year in college.
Okay. I think, whatever, it's not like anybody's under any obligation to tell their teacher who they're dating in the studio, but I feel like I have a good sense of what's going on, like, every year, like, yeah. I can sort of read the room, but...
Oh, you didn't know?
No, and I also didn't know, like the Creme and Sean aren't together anymore, but, like, they...
Who?
Creme. Do you know Creme and Sean Perrone?
Nope.
They're not together anymore, but they were students at NYU, I think after you were well gone, but they were dating for, like, a whole year. I don't think I even knew.
No.
Just, like, I feel like I'm smart enough that I should be able to pick up on that, but... I don't know.
And the nice thing is, even though they're not, like, super wedged in there, they're going to grow
right.
when they bake. So a little space is actually a good thing.
All right, so I am out of room. Well, I can probably fit one more in there. Oh, sorry. I shouldn't try to squeeze one more in there. What if you squeeze too many? It just, like, kills the vibe.
It'll probably bake out of the pan.
Ah.
So it just won't be, like, pretty picture perfect. It'll taste the same.
Okay. All right. And there's this little butt end that will stick that in there and put that there. All right. How's cool. that looking?
It's good. We don't need these.
All right, so now they go in the oven.
Okay.
But this is where, like, do up to this part on Christmas Eve, like, cover it
mm-hmm.
in plastic or if you have, like, something with the lid and just put it in the fridge.
Not the
or
freezer.
Even do it tomorrow and put it in the freezer and
really?
Defrost it.
That's or, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, good to know.
Yeah, you could, like, do it now and then defrost it on Christmas Eve in the fridge.
Okay.
And then bake it.
I usually need something to do on Christmas Eve. Like, Stephanie
okay.
has, like, if I find myself idle.
Yeah.
Because she's working, she'll put me to work. If she knows that I'm, like, at home diligently making
yeah.
cinnamon buns, I think
okay,
it'll be.
She'll leave you alone.
not that, just, like, it's a better use of my time than
okay.
distracting her and making her
yeah.
waste her time.
So before they go in the oven, I like to bake anything or everything on another pan.
Okay.
Just to prevent spillage.
Mm-hmm.
Because cleaning up burnt sugar from the bottom of an oven mm-hmm. is the worst thing in the world. So this will catch, if anything, kind of oozes over.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And for how long do we put this in? You said 20 minutes?
Yeah, we'll check it in 20. The bottom, yeah.
And the 20 is a, you check it, or is it, you
Are you checking by smell? Like, how are you?
We're going to look at it. Look for color.
Okay. And is that how you, by and large, when you are deciding whether something's done, do you judge on sight or smell or both or everything?
Kind of a combination. Uh-huh. Like, normally I can smell when something is like, oh, it's really close. Yeah. It's probably there. And then I'll look at it, and if it doesn't have the color I know it should, then it's not done. Mm.